This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Shavua Tov, everyone. This week's Parsha, the Meraglim, the spies, come back with a report, an evil report about the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the Pasuk says something very fascinating. And the Pasuk says, Ve'otziu dibas ha'aretz asher taru osa. This is Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Beis, El Bnei Yisrael Lemor. They came back with a report, what they saw. Ha'aretz asher avarnu ba, the land which we passed through, Lasur Osa, to spy out, Eretz Ocheles Yoshevea Hi. It's a land which devours its inhabitants. And therefore, you don't want to go there. The land just eats everyone up. What's that referring to? Rashi, quoting the Gemara in Maseches Sota and Daf Lamed Hei, says, "B'kol makom shavarnu," in every single place that we went to the hotel, we went to the restaurant, we went to the field, wherever we went, what happened? Matzanum kovrei mesim. We found the people burying the dead. Wherever they went, they were just burying people all day and all night. And therefore, you don't want to go to this place. People are dying, left and right. And Rashi continues from the Gemara, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa L'tova. Hashem did that for their benefit. Kidei L'tardam Be'evlam. So that the people in the land would be busy with their mourning. Don't forget those words. It's going to come up a little later. L'tardam Be'evlam. That they were busy with their mourning. So they wouldn't pay attention to these 12 people just strolling into a land and spying out. So they saw it as something very bad. This is horrible. The land just kills everyone. But really, they should have seen the good. They should have seen that Hashem set this all up so that no one would pay attention to them. Now, the Stipler Gaon in the Sefer Birkas Peretz, he points out, how should they have seen this? So I'll give a mashal. Yeah, this person's listening to the news and he hears that, you know, there was a car accident, God forbid, and someone passed away, was killed in the car accident. Okay, doesn't really, you know, get all emotional from that. And then he hears it's a terror attack on the front page of the newspaper, right? Oh, that is very, he gets very bothered by. What's the difference? At one point, one person died in both of those situations. So why does one get him all excited and the other one not? So the answer is because we hear all the time that there's a car accident, unfortunately. A car accident here, a car accident here. Okay, it's sad. But we're numb to it, we're used to it. When things happen often, so it doesn't stir us up in the same way. So the Stipler points out, he says, if the spies would have just taken a step back for a minute and thought about this, and they would have said, why is everyone so busy and so involved in the burials and in the evlam, in the mourning? If this was a place that actually killed everyone, right, that's what they said, it's a land that just devours all of its inhabitants, so every single day this is happening. So okay, they're burying, but you wouldn't have thought that they'd be so consumed with the mourning that they wouldn't pay attention to 12 complete strangers just strolling through their land. So the spies should have taken a step back and said, wait a minute, this must be like a one-time thing. This wasn't normal. This is not what happened yesterday, the day before, and the day before. The fact that everyone's so busy and so stirred up about it must be, it just happened for the first time today. And they would have realized that, oh, maybe Hashem did this to help us out so that they wouldn't pay attention. But the question is, if Hashem was doing this just so that they no one would pay attention to us, why didn't Hashem just make it that they couldn't see? Let's make it like a very cloudy day or something like that. You just can't notice the people walking through. What's significant about the fact that people were dying and the people in Eretz Yisrael were consumed with mourning of the dead? Okay, I would like to take a step back to last week's Parsha for a moment and focus on another mitzvah. In Perek Yud, in Pasuk Tes, the Torah tells us, V'chi savo'u milchama be'artzechem, when you have a war, you're in Eretz Yisrael, and there's a war. Al hatzar otzorer eschem, the enemy that's against you, you're going to fight back. V'hari osem b'chatzotros, you blow the trumpets. Call out to Hashem, save us! There's a war! We're in trouble! Save us! V'nizkartem b'fnei Hashem, will be remembered by Hashem, Elokeichem, v'noshatem o'evechem, and Hashem will save us. Call out in prayer, blow that trumpet in the sense of prayer. Calling out for help. The next pasuk, Pasuk Yud, says, "Ubiyom simchaschem ubamaadechem." When it comes to your holidays, the times that you're rejoicing, uvroshei chodeshem and rosh chodesh, utkatem b'chatzotzos, blow the trumpets, alaloseichem over the korbanos, v'azivchei shalmechem, the other korbanos, v'ayulachem lezikaron lefnei elokeichem, ani Hashem elokeichem. Two types of blowing of the trumpets. One, when you're in distress. I'm at war. I'm in a lot of trouble. This is dangerous. Hashem, save me. You blow the trumpets. Blow it out to Hashem from the inner depths of your soul. Blow out. Hashem, please save me. The next pasuk, completely opposite. We're having a party. It's a holiday. We're excited. Things are great. We're being successful. We're at our high. And we're bringing korbanos to Hashem. What could be better? Blow those trumpets. You know, like the trumpets at a wedding. We're excited, we're happy. We're calling to Hashem, thank you Hashem for everything that you give us. Okay, trumpets, trumpets, but at first glance these have absolutely nothing to do with one another. One's a call out, Hashem, please save us. And the other one's, Hashem, thank you, life is great. I'm blowing the trumpet. Yet the Rambam, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, in Mitzvah Nun Tes, quotes both of the blowing of the chatzotos, blowing of these trumpets, together as one mitzvah. It's the same exact mitzvah. To blow when you're in distress, and to blow when you're being successful. What's the deal? So we see already a beginning of an answer in the Chaskuni. The Chaskuni says that when you blow during the war, it'll stir up a reminder by Hashem of the blowing that you did when you brought the korbanos. Meaning we do this action, we're in distress, we blow the chatzotros, and Hashem says, oh, I remember another time that you blew that. Oh, when you were doing the service of God, when you bring those korbanos, oh, you guys are good people. I'm going to save you now during your war. You blow it in order to remind Hashem of what we did when we brought the korbanos. And the merit of the sacrifices help save us during the war. Okay, so we already see a little bit of a connection. But Rav Perlau, in his Sefer on the Sefer Mitzvahs of Sadia Gaon, Rav Perlau has a very long commentary. And in there, at the end of Mitzvah Tet Zayin, at the end of Mitzvah 16, he quotes the Ibn Ezra. That the Ibn Ezra in his Sefer called Yesod Hamora, not a commonly known Sefer, at the end of Shar Shmini, the eighth gate. At the end, in the Shar Shmini, he says as follows. He says something a lot deeper than the Chaskuni. He says, "V'tziva lahariya b'chatzotros," we were commanded to blow the trumpets, ala olos, when we bring in korbanos, when we bring in these sacrifices, during our success, during our high times, during our holidays, we're commanded to blow the shofar, blowing these chatzotros. You know why we're commanded then? Lihiyot lizikaron be'ariyam b'milchama. In order so that we're down and out, when we're in the war, we're in distress, when the enemies are against us, that Hashem will remember us. Meaning, the only reason we blow the chatzotros during our holidays, during our high times, during our successes, is to save us later on. It's the same exact thing. They're connected in a very, very deep way. It's not just that one reminds us of the other. The purpose of blowing the chatzotros during our holidays, during the good times, is in order so that later on when we blow it during war, Hashem is going to remember us. What does that mean? What's the going on behind the scenes over here? What's the depth of this idea? So Rabbi Weinfeld, in the Sefer Ubiyom Simchaschem, elaborates on this idea, and he says as follows. A lot of times, when things are difficult, we have challenges, right? Everyone has challenges. Some challenges are just being successful on a day-to-day basis. Everyone has challenges. That's what life is about. Sometimes when we have challenges, all of a sudden we turn to Hashem. Hashem, please help me. Please. This person's sick. Please give this person a refuah shleima. Or I'm having trouble in yeshiva. Please, Hashem, please just let me figure this out. People have difficulty with their parnasa. Hashem, please give me money. When we're troubled, when we're having difficulty, we turn to God. Please save us. But unfortunately, when things are good, and we're riding high, when we're enjoying life and we're being successful, we sometimes forget about how Hashem is very prominent in our lives. How Hashem is still helping us with all of our successes. Right? The Rashi brings from the Gemara that when Noach, who spoke to God, right? Noach knew that there was a God. But when Noach was told, go into the Teva, he only closed the door at the very last moment, when the rain already started coming down. And Rashi says, because Noach was Mikatnei Amunah, he was from the lower level Amunah people. So the Chazon Ish asked, what does that mean? The lower level Amunah people. If you go to Essentials, yeah, and you get down all the proofs, that's it, you believe in Hashem. Does it matter if you know 5 proofs, and you know 3 proofs, and you only know 1 proof? At the end of the day, you know there's a God, right? You believe in Hashem. So what does it mean? There's higher level Amunah people and lower level Amunah people. What does that mean? I always say my grandmother, Olav HaShalom, her second yahrzeit was just this Friday. She didn't know any of the proofs. But I don't know anyone that had more Amunah in Hashem than she did. So what does this mean? Higher levels and lower levels. Noah, he spoke to God. He for sure believed in Hashem. He was a lower level Amunah guy. What does that mean? So the Chazon Ish says that Amunah doesn't mean, do I know that there's a God, do I not know there's a God? It's, do I live every moment with Hashem? When a person gets angry, the Rambam says, Kol HaKoeh, someone who gets angry, is ki'ilu oved avodah zarah, as if he's doing idol worship. Idol worship? Come on! We believe in Hashem! I just daven shachris. The guy tripped me while I was walking out, I got upset at him. Of course, I'm not oved avodah zarah, I'm not worshipping idols. But the idea is at that moment you're getting angry. Why are you getting angry? Obviously Hashem wanted this to happen to you. Right? So what are you getting angry about? Oh, must be. Nothing about Hashem right now. Oh, you're nothing about Hashem right now. Oh, you're worshipping idols. If every single moment we could think about, oh, Hashem is part of my life. Hashem is allowing me to breathe. Hashem is allowing me to speak. Hashem is allowing you to listen. Hashem is allowing you to cough. Right? Where Hashem is with us every single moment of the day. And then we could have higher level people and lower level people. Some people that live with it every single moment, and some people that need to work on that. And even though Noach knew that there was a God, he wasn't from the highest level of every single moment, and therefore he waited to the last moment to close the door of the Teva. The idea is that every single moment we have to recognize, we have to feel Hashem is with us. I'm being successful, I'm learning well, I'm making money, I'm healthy. Do I think about Hashem right now as well, or not? It's much harder to believe in Hashem and to think about Hashem, to be cognizant of how Hashem is involved in every minute of my life when things are good. When things are good, when you're having your holiday and you're being successful and it's so much fun and the whole family's around and we're singing and we're bringing the korbanos and everything's great, then to say, oh, it's all from Hashem. Hashem, thank you. Let me blow that chatzotzeros, let me blow that trumpet to thank you, Hashem, for everything that you've given me. That's a whole other level. That's high level. And when you blow during that time, when you give your gratitude when things are good, when you're on a high, so then when things are a little bit down and out, and you turn to Hashem, Hashem doesn't say, oh, you? Who are you? I haven't seen you in such a long time. Where have you been? Oh, what do you mean? Remember the last crisis that I had? I called out to you? Oh, yeah, I remember you now. No. Yeah. Oh, what do you mean? Just 5 minutes ago when I was riding high and things were successful, I was talking to you, God. I was thanking you. I was noticing that you're part of my life. Oh, yeah, you. I know you. Every day I see you. Oh, I'm going to save you. The blowing of the chatzotzeros when things are good is difficult. To recognize that Hashem is with us every moment, that's not easy. But when you do that, when you count your blessings every single moment, Then, later on, when you're challenged and you need to ask Hashem to help you through that challenge, Hashem's going to save you because He remembers all that you called out to Him during the good times. I remember my grandmother, when I have a cousin who was married, and her husband passed away very, very young. They had two very little children. So when he passed away, my cousin asked my grandmother, you know, how is it that you survived the Holocaust, you came to America after Auschwitz, no money, didn't speak the language, and you're always so happy. You're always happy. The worst life in the world. How are you so happy? And she wanted to get chizuk, strength from my grandmother to how she could go through her challenge when her husband passed away. My grandmother said, I just see all the time how much bracha I have in my life. Hashem is so good to me. So, what's there to complain about? When you start every moment thinking about how can I move my finger, how can I walk, how can I talk, how can I breathe, how can I this? So the amount of bracha is overwhelming. It gives you a headache. Right? And then, if something happens, so, it's not as bad. We're able to get through it because we're built up so much with our connection to Hashem at every single moment. The Sefer Nachlas Dvash points out something fascinating. He says, there's one other time that we find in the Torah that people were very busy with mourning. When's that? So it comes in a strange place. In the beginning of Parshas Maaseh, in a few weeks from now, the Torah says that here are the Masaos, here are the journeys of the Jewish people. They went from this place to this place to this place to this place. It's one of the easiest parshas to do Shnai Mikvecha Targum. It just says it went to this place to this place to this place to this place. It's very smooth. Okay? But in the very beginning, the Torah says something very strange. The Torah says, Eila Maaseh B'nei Yisrael She'atzum Eretz Mitzrayim. We're going to count all the stops from the time they left Egypt. And Moshe wrote down all their travels. And here it goes. Vaisume Ramses, Bachodesh HaRishon, they left Ramses, that was in Egypt. Bachamisha Saryom, Bachodesh HaRishon, the 15th day of Nisan. Bimacharasa Pesach. Yatsu B'nei Yisrael B'yad Ramah, they went up. They were on a high. Here we go, we're going out of here. Leinei Kumotzar, in front of all the Egyptians. Bye bye. They're all there watching. We're out of here. Umitzrayim Mikabrim. And the Egyptians were burying. All the firstborns that were killed in Makas Bechoros. They went from this place to that place to this place. What in the world? Over here it's saying that when they went out, they were busy burying the people. What does that have to do with anything? Says Rashi, Umitzrayim Mekabrim, remember those words that we spoke about in the beginning? Trudim Bevlam. They were busy in their mourning. The exact same words that we find by the Meraglim. They were busy in their mourning. Firstborn, dying all over the place. The Egyptians were, oh my goodness, this is horrible. Oh, the Jews are leaving. Forget those Jews. This is horrible. This son and that son and this son and this son. They were so busy in their mourning. Comes along the Sefer, Nachlas Dvash, and says, the Torah is coming to highlight something over here. Why did the Jews go from this place to 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 this place? Why did they go straight into Eretz Yisrael? Because of the sin of the Meraglim. Because of the Chet of Meraglim, they had to stay in the desert for 40 years. Why did they have to stay in the desert for 40 years? Because they listened to this bad report and they cried over it. What was the bad report? The land was devouring its inhabitants. They were burying people all over the place and they were busy in their mourning. Hello. Do you remember this ever happening to you before? When you left Egypt, Biyad Ramah, you were successful. Things were good. Things were great. How did you get out of there? Why did the Egyptians just let you go? What's the answer? Because they were busy mourning the dead bodies. They were busy mourning over the firstborn. Don't you remember when you were leaving Mitzrayim in the good times, how Hashem was there and He set that whole episode up so that you could just walk right out? Over your head. You were successful, things were good, you were walking out, you forgot why the Egyptians didn't stop you. They didn't stop you because Hashem set it up for you. Hashem set it up that they'd be so deep in their mourning that they couldn't pay attention to you. And then you just walked out, and here you have the same exact episode, okay? The spies went in, they weren't looking necessarily for the good report, and the same exact episode, mourning, busy with the mourning, and they didn't even pay attention to you, and you all of a sudden, oh, this place is really bad. If they would have been conditioned when things were good, when they left Mitzrayim, and they recognized how Hashem set this up to let them out, then when they got to Eretz Yisrael spying out the land, and maybe it wasn't 100% what they expected, they would have been used to it already. Oh, that was on my bracha list. Every night before I go to sleep, I count 5 brachas of the day. So I remember that one. It was mourning, busy in mourning, allows you to be successful. Oh, here it is again. And we would have known that this is a good thing. The exact same thing happened to them, not so long before. Over their head. Because when we're successful, we don't pay attention to how Hashem set things up for us that we could be successful. We had a great Shabbos this past Shabbos. Well, how did it work out? What did Hashem do in order to enable us to have a great Shabbos? We don't think about that so much. We get a good invite. We asked for the invite. We stayed in yeshiva. It was beautiful on the merpeset. Whatever it was, we don't think about, oh wow, Hashem orchestrated all that. But if we count our blessings every single day, day in, day out, so that when things come out a little bit difficult, we'd be able to focus on all the bracha and see the good in everything. I want to read an article, a letter that I received this week from one of the alumni of the yeshiva. This is my shiur around 10 years ago, and he has a son who's in the ICU. A little baby was born with some issues, and he's in the ICU. His name is Eliyahu Eliezer ben Rachel. You should have refuah shleima b'sof sharcha le'Yisrael. He writes as follows. In my conversations with people throughout the past busy week, I've heard a lot of comments along the following lines. This is the father of the boy. How are you coping with this? I'm afraid you're not going to be able to handle this. I can't even imagine how difficult this must be for you and your family. It's so amazing how strong you guys are, etc., etc., etc. And as a side point, these are the most ridiculous questions. Unfortunately, people sometimes ask very inappropriate questions to people when they're in a difficult time. Okay, but these are the questions that he's hearing. And he writes as follows. To be sure, everyone is coming from a place of genuine concern and compassion, but I'd like to attempt to put some hashkafos, life outlook, into place. Specifically on the issue of coping with serious challenges. In truth, I've been a bit thrown off by these comments. I've thought to myself, coping? Breaking? I'm doing just fine. But allow me to articulate why. The next paragraph is titled The ER. When I arrived at the ER at Sick Kids last Tuesday, my wife had gone with the baby in the ambulance, I was greeted with the following scene. I approached someone at the reception and said that my wife had recently been admitted. He calmly asked me for some information, and then another coworker eventually came over and said, "Hi, mister. Nice to meet you. So I just wanted to prep you a little bit. We're going to go into this other room over there where your wife is, and I just don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of people there. I can assure you everyone is doing this and the other, etc." We go into a large room right in the middle of the ER. There's literally 25 plus people, all busily working. This one attaching this tube, this monitoring this, this injecting that, this adjusting this, this consulting with him, this paging her, etc. And in the middle of it all, in the middle of all this activity, is this little 8-day-old, 6.15-pound baby Elia lying on a little bed, sedated, in a state of critical resuscitation. And of course, my wife, off in the corner, surrounded by the social workers, helplessly. A little baby in a crisis situation. But I want to focus in on something. Amongst the 25-plus medical professionals that are standing around, working frantically, how many of them are panicking? How many of them are stressing out? How many of them are not coping? None. Not a single one. Why? Because they are professionals. This is what they've been waiting for. This is what they've been trained for, what they've rehearsed, both mentally and physically, and having been setting themselves up for. Now is not a time for buckling. Now is a time for maximum performance. This is literally what they're waiting for. And not despite the pressure, but because of the pressure, they perform their jobs at maximum capacity. My dear friends and family, each and every one of us has been placed on planet Earth for this short stint called life, to be a professional human being. That is one who takes the challenges that the Creator throws his or her way and passes with flying colors. This is a very basic Jewish concept, but let's just have a look at one of the classic sources of this idea, and he goes on to elaborate. What a powerful line. The professionals, these people are professionals. Professionals don't stress out. Professionals don't start figuring out, what am I supposed to do? Because they're building themselves through the good times, through the easy times, when they're in school, when they're relaxed, when there's nothing on their head, when it's not the real life situation, to be able to tackle those times when things are difficult. And that's who we are. We're life professionals. Things are good. Doesn't mean just coast. Doesn't just mean continue as is. Focus. Focus on why it's good. Recognize that it's Hashem in every single part of our life. Build up our emunah, that no matter what, we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. He's holding our hand. He's allowing us to be successful. He's giving us the bracha. He's giving us the health. He's giving us the money. He's giving us everything that we need to succeed. And then, if something gets thrown our way, a little challenge here or there, no problem. We're able to take on that challenge. Because Hashem has been with us till now, He'll continue with us in the next stage as well. Be'ez Hashem, if we could take this message, blowing the chatzotzros when things are good, counting our brachas, every night, everyone should take a couple minutes, count five things that Hashem gave us over the course of the day. You want to build it up to 10, you want to build it up to 20, no problem. Start with five. So we should always be cognizant of Hashem's presence in our lives, of the amazing blessing that we have in our lives. So as we embark on life and live life, which is full of challenges, daily challenges, bigger and smaller, we'll be able to succeed like no other, and we'll all be able to be happy and have an incredible, successful life. Shavua Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.